Into the Bad Quaker podcast, where liberty is our mission. Today is Monday, July 8th, 2013. This is podcast number 328, and my name is Ben Stone. Today's podcast is going to be an interview that I did with Drew Phillips. Drew and I had a lot of fun at Porkfest, and then about a week after Porkfest, we talked to each other on Skype, and this is the recording of it. Now, before we get into that, a real quick update. My wife and I are still in our RV, still on the road, moving from campground to campground. We've kind of found one that's really comfortable here, and we've stayed a few extra days. But we're having a lot of fun moving across country. So if you're following Bad Quaker Facebook, or if you're one of my Facebook friends as Ben Stone on Facebook, or if you're on the Bad Quaker forum, or whatever, and you haven't seen me, it's because I'm pretty much not on the internet. I've done the recordings and so forth, and then when we get a chance, I get a hotspot or whatever, and we upload them. And so we've been trying to keep the process going. But as my wife and I are moving around, and as we're enjoying what is basically a vacation for us, I'm not spending any real time at all, just surfing the internet or playing around on Facebook or anything. And it's really, I hate to admit it, but, Michael Dean said this a long time ago when he was dropping off of Facebook, that it really frees up a lot of time and it frees up a lot of energy to be away from Facebook. And I find that to be the case. Facebook is really, it's very draining for me. It eats a lot of time, and I'm not sure that it really, the longer I'm away from Facebook, the less I want to go back to it. So I may end up not being over there at all. But we do have some really good people that are running the Bad Quaker, badquaker.com Facebook page. And if you're on Facebook and you want to interact, through that, that's a great way to do it. The moderators take care of the badquaker.com Facebook. And I need to actually communicate with them more than I do. I really appreciate the work that they're doing. And the same way with the monitors at the forum. Eventually, I will be back home. And eventually, well, we assume I'll be back home. No one knows the future. But eventually, it's our plan to be back home in a few days or maybe a week. And, maybe I can get back on the forum and start interacting with the folks there as well. But I want to make the forum my primary place to interact rather than anywhere else. So anyway, no more explanation. Here's my interview with Drew, and I hope you enjoy it. And with me on Skype, and as always, I warn that Skype's not always that dependable, but with me on Skype is Drew Phillips. And Drew and I had a real hoot at Porkfest just a few days ago or a week ago or 2 weeks ago or something. I can't remember because I'm still on the road, still enjoying the afterglow of Porkfest. Drew, welcome to the Bad Quaker podcast. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good, Ben. Thanks so much for having me here.
Hey, let's talk about the fun.
We did have a hoot.
Yeah. Let's talk about the fun we had at the Bad Quaker campsite with Davi and, oh man, who all was there? You were there, I was there, Davi Barker was there, and, and Ernie was there.
The Tool Bus family.
Yeah, and the whole Tool Bus family was there. Ernie Hancock was there from Freedom's Phoenix. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks for that, Ben. Was that a Sunday night afterglow party at your trailer site there after Porkfest, and everyone had pretty much left the campground, and we were hidden away in the back there, and you and the family and the wife put on a great spread and had some grub and just sort of enjoyed the aftermath of a full week of Porkfest. That was it was pretty wild. This was my third year going to the Porkfest, and I had a really good time, and yeah, the party you put on was fun. We had a little campfire and some beers and some and our Bitcoin not bombs bomber pinata that yeah. Davi made, and it was filled with Stateless Sweets candy, and there was a Maji Metals silver round in it, and we got to explode the pinata. Actually, what was she, about 12 years old?
Yeah, something we let a 12. That.
We let a 12-year-old destroy a pinata with a machete. Only at Porkfest is that acceptable. Anywhere else in the world, you would have CPS called on you instantly.
Yeah, and she welded that machete pretty well, too. She hit it in the first whack and just whacked it right open.
Yeah, you know, so Ernie Hancock kept asking, well, put a leash on her and put it on her wrist, you know, around the machete. And she says, oh, I don't need that. I'm not going to let go. And then I felt bad because her father and mother start walking over. And I said, hey, Paul, you know, maybe this wasn't the most responsible thing, but we put a machete in your daughter's hand. And he looked at her and he looked at Davi and he says, my responsibility as a parent is to make sure that my daughter is safe. And right now she's perfectly fine. It's Davi that I'm worried about.
Yeah, she
was. But that's his problem, she said, you know.
Yeah, those were great people. The tool bus people were really some great people. They were our neighbors there, and we really had some fun with them.
Yeah, that was fun. I like, for those who have never been to Porkfest, you can camp in Agra Valley and near the music hall and where it's loud and people tend to stay up late and have conversations, or you can stay in the back, and I recommend the back, and I thought we had we had our own little spot there with your trailer, the tool bus, and where we were staying. So it was nice to have our own little away from the party zone, so to speak. So that was a lot of fun.
That really was. And Davi had that Bitcoin pinata. It's the only Bitcoin pinata that I'm aware of. Have you seen another one?
I think that's another world's first from Bitcoin Not Bombs. The idea came up, we really wanted to make a pinata out of a PayPal logo, and we thought that'd be a good fundraiser and people could like take a swing at PayPal for a dollar, and it just never came together, and so Davi started tinkering around with bombers and he had paper airplane models, and then he figured out how to sort of make to scale it up in size, and we needed something big enough to put Stateless Sweets in. It was sort of this obvious cross promotion opportunity with them and Amaji Metals, and we put in one of their silver rounds, but nobody ever realized that. But it was fun. So we had this bomber, this pinata all week, and we never really let anyone take a swing at it. Just kind of sat out on Jillian's table, and then that last night, yeah, we decided to swing it, but there was no tree to be had, so Davi's just swinging it around his head, and then a 12-year-old has a machete, your machete, and right, she got three good whacks at it and connected on all three, and on the third one, man, the candy just flew everywhere, so that was a lot of fun, and that's just sort of the weird creative stuff that I don't know, I think about this stuff all the time, but Porkfest is like this place where it's like summer camp in that way, where you can sort of go and give your creative spiel and come up with some fun skits and that's sort of a fun place to perform them for people and do sort of entertaining things like that. So I think that's why I enjoy going to Porkfest so much. It's summer camp for the mind.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. And there's, you know, a wild diversity. I say this all the time, but there's just this wild diversity. Everything from, keeping in mind the family audience, the giant white dome tent, you know, did you know about that?
Yeah, I heard some rumors about what was going on up there, the geodesic dome. But I didn't see for myself, I'll just put it that way.
But everything from that to, you know, really family-oriented stuff. There was family activities. There was the zombie versus humans game that sort of went over the entire campground. It was a lot of fun. It was really crazy and a lot of fun.
Of the 3 years that I've gone, this year was certainly the most amount of young children, families that I've seen in the past two years ago. It was sort of a wild Mardi Gras party, as it was described. And then from there, it sort of toned down a bit, and they really focused on, you know, making it welcoming for families. And I've seen an increase in that, so that's great. And I think it's great to see teenagers and young teens, not just there, you know, having a summer vacation, but they're sort of learning about libertarianism without feeling like they're learning about, you know, libertarianism. So I think that's great, and I think the Free State should be proud of the festival that they put on in that sense.
Hey, since we were talking about Bitcoins, not bombs, and we were talking about the actual coin that was in there, that one was from Amage Metals, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was an AOCS round. I was referring to the Rothbard round. I'm actually the proud owner of that round now, but it's minted by AOCS. But yeah, it was being sold by Amage Metals, and we were happy to help get some of their banners out to you and Jillian, and make sure that people knew about their service and that you can get metals over there. And one of the reasons I think that was significant at Porkfest was everyone's sort of abandoning silver for Bitcoin these days in the Liberty Movement, and I still think the two go hand in hand. But if you're looking to sell your Bitcoins, why sell for war dollars when you can buy silver? You know, so that's that was certainly a lot of fun to bring them and let people know about. I call it Amage, but how do you say it?
I say it different almost every time I say it. So
okay,
Amage's
go.
Good. Amage.
Yeah, so that was a lot of fun, and then the pinata, like I said, it did have a silver round snuck in it, but it was mine anyway. So,
unless one of the others of us grabbed it first, then you wouldn't know.
That's right. But luckily, I was able to retain my. But it's a beautiful round, and it, like I said, it's an AOCS piece, and they make really good stuff. But who doesn't like, you know, Murray Rothbard on a silver round? And they had some other ones, and they have their marijuana legalize it, you know, with a pot leaf. And so we were just showcasing some of their silver rounds there at Jillian's booth in Niagara Valley. And then on the last day, she was auctioning them off, and it showed that there was quite a market. People do enjoy you know, a good looking round like that, and it does have sort of a higher trade value. And I don't know how much silver bartering and trading is going on, you know, sort of throughout the country amongst libertarians and anarchists. But at Porkfest, there's quite a bit of it going on, and that's always fun to see. It's sort of a proof of concept, or really just maybe an example, and we can all sort of get together and feel, you know, what it's like to trade and sound money for the week and buy a hot dog. Or you know, some vendors weren't taking them this year for logistical reasons, and I understand that. Weren't taking silver in general. But others were, and there was even finally an exchange, which is something that's sort of been, you know, 3 years in the work. You know, 2 years ago, copper was really popular, and there were people trading copper, and there was a sort of a liquid market for that. And then these silver trinkets like the dime cards and Shire silver have been popular in past years. But there's never really been an exchange, a real-time exchange, and that someone was providing that service this year, so that was interesting. And of course, they were not only converting silver to dollars, but also Bitcoin was in the mix, so that was kind of cool. And there was the Mesu Bitcoin machine was there, so you could just, if you had fiat dollars, you could go get Bitcoins really easily. And then to spend the Bitcoins, just about everybody there had a QR code out and was accepting Bitcoin. So it was the festival without fiat was one of the headlines I read recently about it, so that was kind of fun.
I think there's some confusion too right now about what's going on in the precious metal market, because it seems like there's some price instability or some volatility. But you know, I don't look at this at all as a time to worry about the metal prices. I look at it as a really good opportunity to get some metals a little bit cheaper than we have recently. Because I don't see any possible way in the long run. I mean, short term, they can do anything. But I don't see any way in the long term that they're going to do anything other than go up.
I would agree, and right. I mean, we're back down to 1850, and it's pretty crazy. But you're right. It's a great time to buy, and you may have lost technically lost some of your value over the last 6 months to a year to 2 years. But yeah, in my mind, it's all worth 50 an ounce. I mean, it is manipulation. They're selling silver that doesn't exist. It costs more to mine it than it does to buy it, which isn't true. If you may say that the spot price right now is $20 or $18.50 or whatever it is, but go into your local coin shop and try to buy silver at that price. It won't happen. The premiums are up, and you're not going to get silver at this price. They're having this huge supply issue, and places like Amaji Metals, even other big brokerages that I've worked with, are having a problem getting physical supply in, and it is manipulation. And if everybody just demanded to take physical possession of all this silver, it would shake out pretty quickly that the price is being manipulated and the supply is not there. So what that really means is silver should be $30 an ounce. It should be something closer to that. So we're seeing manipulation, and that's why I say in my mind it's all worth 50. So yeah, buy it if you can get your hands on it. Junk silver, circulated silver is a cheap way to get into silver, but if you can get bullion ounces, get them and get them at a good price and just hold them. You know, this is a long-term thing. It may take a few years, but at some point the card game has to sort of crumble and silver will go back up to where it's more realistically priced. I can't say what that is, but it's much higher than it is now.
Yeah. Can you hear me right now, Drew?
I can.
Okay.
Sorry. I'm having a thunderstorm here as well.
Yeah, that's okay. Skype has given me some error messages, but I think we're still getting a pretty good recording out of it, so we can just press on. Okay. Yeah, I that's really one of the reasons. I hate to sound like we're doing a commercial here because we're really not doing a commercial, but that's one of the reasons why that I'm really kind of very happy to be on board with Amaji Metals, because they're actually shipping metal, that, and a lot of people are not. A lot of people are either shutting down or they're backing off in one way or the other because the supply is just not there. And like you're saying, you know, real value is based on supply and demand. And there's a big demand right now for real metal that you can hold in your hands, not scribbles on a piece of paper. And that's what's throwing off the market, is that there's these manipulations that are going on with people who have sold stuff that was just scribbles on paper. It wasn't actual stuff that arrives in the mail and you can hold it and put it in a sock and put it in your drawer or whatever.
Right, and you're right. Amaji's still shipping, and they're fighting as well to get their supply in like everybody else. But right, if you go to your local coin shop, you'll notice that when the prices drop like this, they pull their inventory from the shelves, and it isn't so much that they pull their inventory because they're taking a loss because the price has just gone down. They're pulling their inventory because if they can't replace it at the price they sold it at, they're really going to take a loss. You can sell silver at a lower price so long as you can replace it. That's how most brokerage houses work. As soon as they make a sale, they go right out to the market and they buy exactly as much silver for exact same price. Most brokerages don't think in terms of dollars. They only think in terms of ounces. So as long as their pile of silver is always the same price, they make money on the turn, selling and buying. But when you have a supply problem like you do now and you can't replace the silver that you just sold, you're going to lose your shirt. And a lot of these smaller local coin shops, they have to pull their inventory for that reason. So it's great to have somebody like Amaji who's taking Bitcoin as well. And you can actually take delivery and actually get some silver, like you said, in your sock drawer or wherever you might keep it. So that's interesting, and I think Porkfest showed that if the manipulators are allowed to manipulate silver as they do, people do get sort of gun shy and won't spend it. They might hoard it more, or there certainly are people who are panicking and selling their silver. I don't think that's the right move, but that's happening. So Porkfest, for all the credit that it gets as sort of the big silver trading festival of the year, this year I think it definitely took a back seat to Bitcoin, and there was certainly, which is funny because there's a real Wi-Fi connection problem at Porkfest, but yet people were still doing Bitcoin transactions. So go figure, right? You're out in the middle of the woods, and people would rather use digital currency than physical currency when it's much harder to spend. But I guess that's what the people want.
And I should mention, so our audience knows that, I'm in the understanding that a lot of the Wi-Fi problems are going to be taken care of for next year. They really expect a much better Wi-Fi for 2014 than we've seen in the past.
Yeah, they said that last year, but you know, the running joke was, you know, oh, the NSA doesn't have to come spy on us. All they have to do is just put in an extra cell tower and they can monitor what's going on, you know. But
maybe they heard that.
I'm sure they did. But yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's a hit or miss thing. If you have Verizon, you're usually good to go, but if you got any of the others, you're SOL. So, but I don't mind it. The last few years, it's been the same story. By about Wednesday, I stop checking my email and my phone, and I let the battery die, and then I throw it in a corner, and I don't think about it for the rest of the week. So I don't mind. It does make Bitcoin transactions a bit more difficult, and I know some people had a few problems with it, but I like being out there and being off-grid and getting away from that stuff for a while. So it's a vacation in that sense, and a fun one at that. So.
You know, I think that's one of the things that I really enjoy about being out in the RV and driving around with my wife at different campgrounds and stuff, is that it kind of gives me an excuse not to be on Facebook and not to be, you know, on the internet every day, updating, talking to people. I'm kind of I'll admit in that sense I'm kind of a loner, and I kind of prefer to hide in the woods in the camper than be on the internet constantly. So in a sense, that's what Porkfest is. It's an excuse for me to where I can say, well, sorry, you know, I have T-Mobile, there's no coverage, my phone is dead, don't even bother.
And I'm jealous, so there you go. I mean, that's I do. I think, you know, someone said that we live in such a connected world, but yet we're really not all that connected with each other. And so these sort of fake digital relationships that we have aren't as fulfilling as the ones we used to have when we used to sit around a campfire and you know, and talk about these things and share ideas. So people may feel connected because they have a device in their hand, but they really aren't. So I too look to find reasons to ignore Facebook and get off it and not check my phone as much and things like that. And so, yeah, Porkfest is a great excuse. But you know, I should take the word from you and get an RV and just hit the road. But you know, I'm not there in my life yet, but I am sort of jealous of your setup. That's a really slick little RV you got. And I think that'd be a lot of fun to, you know, retire and take on the country and, you know, go where you want to go.
Yeah, as Michael W. Dean says, he refers to myself and my wife. He says they drive around the country with a dog in a van solving mysteries.
Oh, but your dog's not Scooby-Doo, is it?
Not quite that big. So I hate to go into the direction of the weather, but since we can hear the rumbles in the background, you guys have been in a long, hot, dry stretch, haven't you?
Yeah, I live in the desert, and it was 115 degrees this last few weeks. I was actually gone for the hottest week of the year for Porkfest, so that was great that I got to miss that. But yeah, I live in southern Arizona, and it's 107 right now. But right now the monsoon season is rolling in, so I have thunderstorms and a small amount of rain falling, and this is the sweet time of the year. This is the best time of the year to be in southern Arizona. It is hot. It is more humid than normal, but the monsoon season is beautiful. The moisture comes down in the afternoon, and it rains in the evening. The next day, the heat comes in, and all the moisture gets evaporated up into the sky, and about 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, after it cools off, all that moisture just falls right back down to the ground again, and it happens, you know, over and over, day in, day out for a month. And it's really the most beautiful time. We're sort of world-renowned for our lightning storms here in Tucson. Most of the most famous photos you've ever seen of lightning was taken somewhere in southern Arizona. So it's just a great place to be sitting on the back patio and enjoying this weather. So we tolerate the heat for this type of stuff.
Do you have any plans on going to the Jackalope Festival?
Yeah, I think I committed to doing that. I don't even know what it is. I should look. I'm not the organizer, so don't ask me to do a commercial for it. But my good friend Alma she was inspired by Porkfest to sort of do her own festival, and she did it last year. And they went up to a place called Baca Meadows, which I'm familiar with the area. Up in northern Arizona, it's very beautiful. It's up in the mountains, so it's very cool.
Very remote.
Yeah, very, very remote. They're back there, in the back there. And so from the pictures I saw, I mean, I sort of get the geography, and I think it'd be a great place to go and camp. So there's this sort of like competitive thing where it's, you know, it's got to be bigger, better than Porkfest. And I'm going, I don't think you can achieve that in the second year, and I certainly don't want to be involved in trying. So I don't intend to go and do anything major. I just intend to go and sit down and camp and enjoy people's company. No big plans for that, but I do think I'll go up for the weekend. And like I said, the area up in northeastern Arizona is a really beautiful place.
Yeah, my wife and I were very tempted to go. The distance from Ohio, though, is just crushing. And, you know, the motorhome we get like 8 miles to the gallon. So about every 2 or 3 hours, we're dropping $100 into the tank. It's a little rough. We decided not to try it this year. But I definitely hope that grows, because the West needs something like that. They have, you know, there's the big libertarian thing in Las Vegas every year. And I'm not...
not a libertarian event.
Yeah, you just look at who the main people are. It's more like a Cato LP party type event.
Yeah, their L's are so big, their R's. Right, we're talking about Freedom Fest, and they say that it's a libertarian event, but I've never been convinced. It's a beltway type of thing, and a lot of, you know, former Republicans who pretend to be libertarians. So, sorry, I had to stop you when you said big libertarian event on the West Coast. It's not.
Yeah.
And Libertopia is pretty good, but...
Yeah, I started to say that. There's the one in San Diego that's Libertopia, and that's a pretty big event. But then again, for me, you know, that's going to Arizona and then going on to California. So that's even more $100 bills in the gas tank. And then in addition to that, you have to go into California. And that's almost as bad as like going into North Korea, except it's prettier, you know?
Right. People live in California because the weather's nice. I get it. But it is such a status, you know, I'll censor myself for your younger audience. But, right, why have a Freedom Festival right in the middle of one of the nastiest status, you know, places in the country? But I guess they need it most. You know, my criticism of the Free State Project is, why'd you pick New Hampshire? You know, challenge yourself a little bit. You know, go to Massachusetts. You know, New Hampshire was already a free state. Why? You know, but I still think they do great work. But you're right. So why California? But I've gone to that event the last few years, Libertopia, that is, and they always put on a good show, I think. I've always enjoyed the program and a lot of good minds and libertarian thinkers, and they sort of make it. They try to make it festival-ish and sort of have a party and let people unwind and do that kind of thing. So. But it's nothing yet that I've ever been to compares to Porkfest. It is so different than any conference or event you've ever been to.
The Libertopia is mostly an indoor event, isn't it?
Yeah, so Libertopia was actually outdoors the last 2 years in sort of a courtyard, but it was a hotel, you know, a music venue hotel. So there was this outdoor courtyard where everybody... would gather for the main speakers and for the main stage events. But it is a hotel. It's still a conference room. There's still breakout rooms. And this year they're actually doing it in a different location than the downtown convention center, I think. And so it is going to be much more of an indoor event this year, which is okay. I like change things up. But the setup they've had the last 2 years was kind of nice because it was right by the bay. It's right there on the harbor, and you could see the boats and the seagulls, and you could, you know, smell the sea air, the salt water air, you know, coming in. So that was a nice aspect of it. But this year, right, it'll be indoors. So we'll see how that pans out. And they're sort of doing this. They're calling it the village, and they want us to build these 10 by 10 tables up and be creative. And so we're creative. I just haven't come up with anything yet, so I have no idea what we're going to do in this space, but we'll certainly do something.
I suppose if you have to be in California, San Diego is just, it's one of my favorite places. And I was born in California. I've spent a lot of years living and working in California. And San Diego was the kind of place for us where my wife and I would go to go to some really nice restaurants, some really, not only like super fancy restaurants, there's really good restaurants in San Diego, but there's also these little mom and pop places that are so genuine that it's just amazing the food that you can get in there. And then, of course, that beautiful, the ocean, how it comes in there with the harbor and everything. The only bad thing about San Diego is that some gang of thieves and robbers put a fence across through the middle of it and proclaimed half of it is bad and half of it is good, and then they used force to make it like that. And the other bad thing about San Diego is if you head north out of San Diego, you pass through some beautiful country and some wonderful people, and then you hit L.A., and it's just like, man, But if you can survive getting around L.A., then there's some really nice places in California that, that I miss a lot. And I really wish I could get back and see places like Morro Bay and the beautiful coastline. I can't say anything about the future solid because I don't have control of the future. But I just can't imagine a scenario in my mind where I would say, I think I'll go to California. I just can't imagine that because I would have to give up so many things that are important to me that I'm not sure that I could really do that.
Yeah, I lived in Los Angeles when I was younger, a number of years ago now, and I don't know why I picked the worst city in the whole state. You're so right. L.A. is a wild time. It was fun. You don't forget you only remember the good times, that kind of thing. But you're right. San Diego is so much better, and then there's a lot of Northern California that I'm yet to explore. But like I said, people live there for the weather, and they deal with the statism. So I couldn't do it. I don't see a reason to move there, but that's why people live there, I guess. The weather, not the state.
So what kind of projects have you got going on right now?
So I don't know. We built this whole thing up for Porkfest, and we'd previously gone to the Bitcoin conference under the Bitcoin Not Bombs banners. And people kept asking me and Davi at Porkfest, they said, so what is Bitcoin Not Bombs? And the only thing I could think to reply was, well, you're wearing the T-shirt. You tell me, what it is. I mean, it could just be a good-looking T-shirt. We've at least accomplished that. And I don't know, so like where it goes from here, but a lot of people don't get why we would do such a thing, but we're taking a principled stance and sort of applying it to Bitcoin, right? Like if you want to be an agorist, if you want to be off-grid, if you want to avoid taxes or conveniently forget to pay them or file them, is Bitcoin a solution for you? Is it an option for you to use to subvert the state? And in general, Bitcoin is. But the problem is, these merchant processing companies and sort of the traditional banking infrastructure and the ways that we use Bitcoin and dollars is not. There's sort of a record going on, and financial institutions know what you're doing. So a lot of people have tried to show that Bitcoin is this wonderful wet dream of the libertarian's wet dream of an alternative currency, and I'm not really completely sold yet. I'm a big fan of Bitcoin. I've got a few, and I hope they rise and don't fall. But it's still sort of an experiment. And so when you approach it from this sort of principled stance, can I avoid taxes with this? The answer is yes. You can avoid taxes by using Bitcoin, but sort of the other third-party companies that are coming up around it are very eager to get you involved with the state. They're very eager to be regulated and to be above board, and they're sort of going to the government and saying, okay, we want to make $1 million and we want to be the next big thing in Bitcoin and we want to be the Facebook of Bitcoin. How far do we have to bend over, and what regulations are you going to give me? And that was what we saw at the Bitcoin 2013 conference. It was really sort of dirty to me. It was very wrong, and a lot of people were there just to sort of get an understanding of how they were going to be regulated, and how that was going to help them make money by applying state force to its users, essentially. So if an agorist or somebody approaches me and says, okay, you have this website, you obviously know something about Bitcoin, I want to use Bitcoin, but I don't want to pay the government a cut. I don't want to give them a cut of my sales. I sort of have to tell them, well, you don't have a lot of options that way. You can go sign up with this merchant company over here. But if the IRS ever decides to call this merchant company and ask for a record of what you've been doing in Bitcoin, they're going to hand it right over, and you're no better off now than you were taking credit cards on your website. Sure, it's a little cheaper, it's a little easier, but you're still sort of in the government system that way. So I guess I don't think we've gotten to this point yet with Bitcoin.bombs, but I think that was something that I wanted to accomplish, is I wanted to be able to express to people, yes, you can use Bitcoin to subvert government and not pay taxes, and that makes me happy because we're sort of trying to starve the beast here. But this is how you have to do that, and there are pitfalls, and there are things you need to avoid, and there are companies that are not Bitcoin, and people need to understand that, especially a lot of the new people who are inexperienced who have come rushing to this currency to say, yes, I'm told Bitcoin is the promised land. Bitcoin is this new great alternative currency that's going to help me starve the beast and take away a power from the state. But they have to be careful of how they do that. So I think that was my sort of reasoning for getting behind the project. Davi may have had a completely different reason. I don't know. We've joked that Bitcoin.bombs is all kinds of silly things. Like we want to be the first, we want to sort of be a Satoshi Book of first world records and be a committee to award people titles in the Bitcoin. Like just silly things that we just sort of joke about, because it's so. This is building on the success of the projects that Davi and I did last year, and the Don't Put On Meme thing is you create a slogan like this and you let the people define it themselves. So I don't have to really tell you what Bitcoin.bombs is. It's just going to sort of figure itself out, and that's why I was asking people, you know, what does it mean to you? Because that's really important. You bought this T-shirt, and yeah, it's a great looking T-shirt, but what does this mean to you, and why are you so excited about Bitcoin, and what is it about this sort of anti-war sentiment that really resonates with you? And when I can get the feedback from people at events like Porkfest, then we can sort of move forward and decide what it is that we want to do with this project. So to answer your question, Ben, I have no idea what my next project is. We just sort of figure it out as we go.
Well, I have two quick thoughts on what you said. One is from a Quaker point of view. You know, Quakers constantly are looking for ways to not fund war or to divert money away from war. And if you can use bitcoins or precious metals or bartering or anything else to do that, then that's a positive thing. The other thought that I had was, where was I with? Oh yeah. Thoughts are like butterflies. Anyway, the other thought that I had was that I've always looked at Bitcoin as a stepping stone, not the be all and end all, but as a sort of a proof of concept of things that are to come that will come into the market and be alternatives. And I don't necessarily think we need to be completely 100% sold on anything. But as we watch these things, and this is how markets work, we watch the different products come and go, and we figure out what we like and what we don't like. And then in the end, the market decides. And, you know, supply and demand and all these things that work in the marketplace. And who knows if it'll be bitcoins, who knows if it'll be something we can't even imagine now, or, you know, we might go back to some kind of gold or silver or whatever. But one way or the other, the idea to me is I know that fiat government-backed currencies ultimately crash. And so the better condition I can be in when that happens, the better off I'll be, whether that's in bitcoins or whether it's in silver or whether it's in, you know, buckets of uncracked corn. It doesn't matter. As long as my money, as long as my value, my wealth is not sitting in, you know, paper or numbers in a bank that can just vanish at the whim of some despot.
Oh, I completely agree, and I think you're right about Bitcoin not being the end all. I have yet to, of the other sort of altcoins and some of these other ideas that have sort of developed from it, I haven't seen one yet that I think is going to take off what Bitcoin has. But you're right. This is sort of the proof of concept that digital cryptocurrencies is a reality now, and we'll see. It we may end up with Bitcoin 2.0 or altcoin whatever, and that may be the thing that we end up using. But at the moment, it's certainly a wild ride to be in Bitcoin. So I'm enjoying. I'm speculating, and you know, you win and lose when you play that game. But things are okay, and right, I'm good. You know, I'm able to interact. You know, Davi pinned an article on Bitcoin Not Bombs, and it said the problem with Bitcoin is dollars, and he was talking about some of the problems you have converting from dollars to Bitcoin and Bitcoins to dollars. But actually, when you take that away and you just interact between Bitcoins and silver, it becomes very easy. Like we mentioned before, you can buy precious metals from Amaji and others like Roberts and Roberts. But I can also sell silver on sites like Bitmint and actually acquire a premium for them and receive Bitcoins. So I can go both ways between silver and Bitcoins fairly easily. And that makes life a lot simpler. And when you look at sort of the exchanges, and like I was saying before, when you start interacting with the legacy banking system, that's when the record of what you're doing with your money, and that's sort of something we want to avoid, or I'd like to avoid. So when I look at ways of, well, okay, I got some Bitcoins, well, now I need to get them into dollars because I need to pay my rent or whatever the situation might be, one of the solutions is now, well, I can just buy metals from Amaji, get them delivered to my house, and then if I really need the dollars to pay my rent, well, I can just take the silver to the coin shop and sell them at the coin shop, and I'm going to lose some money in that process. But, you know, I'm still going to lose money if I go through Coinbase and have it deposited into my Wells Fargo account. So, you know, it's how much money are you going to lose? And you know, you're always taking a hit when you're converting from one currency to another. But are there ways to do that lessen my dependency on the Federal Reserve and that deny them a transaction, deny them a taxable event? That's what I want to do. That's sort of been the theme or the reason that I've gone to Porkfest the last few years, is to experiment with these ideas, the silver dime cards and the Shire silver and trading and this sort of stuff. And now I can come home and I can apply those things to my everyday life, and I can reduce my dependency on the dollar. And that to me is a great thing, because like you said, it doesn't stop wars, but it at least is a solution to starve the beast and to not allow them to fund this militarism around the world. I mean, it's that cut and dry. You know, there's a lot of issues to get behind. There's a lot of causes to champion. But, you know, war is something that this country has done really well for a long time, and I'd like to see an end to that.
Yeah, definitely. And that's an area that we're certainly on the same track in that area. And I really appreciate that you guys have worked with at Bitcoin Not Bombs. You guys have worked with several different charities, including antiwar.com, in trying to move the discussion in that direction. That's one of the really good things about, you know, you ask what does Bitcoin Not Bombs mean to you? And that's one of the things I think of, the work you guys have done with Free Aid and the work with who did I just say? Angela Keaton at antiwar.com. Anyway, I'm looking at my messages coming up here from Skype, and it's telling me again that we're having connection problems. So we probably ought to wrap it up and not push it too far, or otherwise we won't get a good ending to the podcast here.
No, that's fine. It's been enjoyable. I really did enjoy spending some time with you and your wife and at Porkfest, and it's great to chat with you on the interwebs.
Yeah, it was really nice, and so folks should check out Bitcoin Not Bombs. Folks should check out the other people that we mentioned, Free Aid, and let's see, who else did we say? Don't Tread on Meme is still there, and they still have some cool stuff. And who else? We should mention Ernie Hancock again. It was great meeting Ernie from Freedom's Phoenix, and Davi Barker. Who else? Oh, and the tool bus. Names keep popping tool in bus. My head.
Yeah, make sure you find them on Facebook. But for guys that missed that story, just real quick, a guy converted an old school bus into basically a garage with all his power tools and storage space and shelves and, you know, hammers and nails and all this stuff. And he's a mobile construction zone in New Hampshire, so look out for the tool bus. And his very talented two daughters there.
Yeah, his older daughter, both the daughters are really amazing girls. They're very bright. You can just tell that they're on it, you know. You can just see it in their eyes and listen to their speech. The older daughter is a very talented artist, and she's come up with some pretty good designs. Maybe Porkfest 2014 might want to incorporate some of her art, because it's pretty amazing.
Well, if they don't, we will. So, Davi already got fired up for next year. So, you always start planning a year and ahead. So we'll see everyone next year with a new bag of tricks.
Hey, Drew, thanks a lot for coming on the show with me. I really appreciate the time.
Hey, thank you, sir. Have a great travel out there, okay?
Hey, I'll do that. Thanks a lot, buddy.
Take care.
Bye. So that was my interview with Drew, and I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks for listening today, and remember to visit badquaker.com, where liberty is our mission. Thanks a lot, folks. Bye.